Welcome to the Retail Tech Podcast. My name is Darius Boussafi, producer and host. And my guest today is Michelle Grant from Salesforce. She's been in the retail space for many years as an analyst and researcher. Thank you so much, Michelle, for joining me.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Please tell us about yourself and the work that you're doing right now.
Yes. So I am the Senior Manager of Strategy and Insights within the retail and consumer goods verticals at Salesforce. And as part of my role, I keep track of the trends that are impacting those industries. I worked on and produced the Connected Shoppers Report. This is the fourth edition of this report. And it was a pleasure of mine to really dive in to the data. We surveyed more than 1,600 global shoppers and more than 1,000 retail executives around the world to understand how their shopping habits have changed in the light of the pandemic.
This is an ongoing series, correct?
Yes. So this is the fourth year, or the fourth edition, I should say, of this report.
And it's released every...
Every 2 years in the fall.
A lot has happened since last time this was done then, 2 years ago.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the key findings in this report.
Yes, definitely. I think one of the biggest changes that we saw in the report is we asked people to estimate shoppers to estimate what percentage of their transactions are done in six different retail types. So we asked physical stores, online marketplaces, brands, digital properties, retailers, digital properties, delivery apps, and then other digital channels. And in the previous reports, we never asked about delivery apps because most of the delivery apps are focused on ride sharing. But we did see a significant pivot in 2020 for Uber Eats and DoorDash to move out of their traditional verticals and start delivering products to people's homes because of the health and safety issues around going into the store and the, in some cases, your retailers were closed, so they were able to ink these deals in order to send out non-essential goods from their stores to homes. So that was one of the biggest changes is including delivery apps as a retail channel. And we saw in the data, 5% of transactions were estimated to go to that channel globally in 2019. And then that jumped to 7% in 2021. So that channel gained 2 percentage points in just 2 years. And it's sticking. When we asked about where the transactions will happen in 2023, consumers said that 7% of their transactions will be with those delivery apps. So that was kind of interesting to me as far as what's sort of evolved over the different editions that we've done.
So is this like a continuation of the super app phenomenon that is a lot more prevalent in China? But are apps actually, like, let's say Uber or delivery apps are actually starting to get into other businesses?
Yes, I would say it's more vertical expansion than super apps, although PayPal, if we want to go down a different route, PayPal is definitely keen on becoming a super app. They just launched they relaunched their app in this fall, and it has a lot more shopping capabilities than it did previously. But for the delivery apps right now in the West, it's all about vertical expansion. So going from either food service like DoorDash into product delivery. If you're Uber, it's not ride sharing, it's food service and products. So it's more about vertical expansion on the existing app in the West. And then, when it comes to delivery, PayPal is using obviously their wedge in payments to capture more of the shopping actions, like actual purchases and couponing.
That entry point is really a key differentiator.
Delivery apps really, really accelerated their vertical expansion in 2020, and we can see that that has resulted in them gaining share in 2021 compared to 2019. And people are now using those apps for more than just what the original premise was.
Something that I see from the report that I'm looking at, by the way, I'm going to include a link to the report in the show notes. So that's going to be available for anybody who wants to actually get access to it. We see a major change between 2019 and 2021, which of course we kind of not know why. But between 21 and 23, there's not much of a, like nothing significant of a change between the two. Like, you know, from physical stores going from 42% actually go up a little bit to 43%. Do you think we're just out of that phase now and the trends are not going to change that much anymore?
It's difficult for anyone to predict their behavior. So we are asking consumers in this question to project what they expect their shopping habits to be. I think from the forward projection of 2 years, I think the store rebound is of note, that people do expect to go back into stores, but not to the same degree as 2019. So in 2019, 57% of the transactions were going through stores. And then in 2023, consumers expected to only be 43%. So that's a huge share drop just over the span of 4 years. And that's kind of what we've seen in the long term, is that, you know, e-commerce is a growing share of retail overall, and it's probably just been accelerated a bit because of the pandemic. And it's also some of the gains from e-commerce, by e-commerce during the pandemic, were because stores were closed and health and safety was a main concern. And now that there are vaccines and other mitigation efforts, that people are a little bit more optimistic about the store. However, we're not out of the woods yet. You know, Europe right now is experiencing a very strong surge in cases, and things are getting locked down again, including the store closures. Australia and New Zealand just came out of a really strong lockdown too, in order to contain COVID. So I think the digital behaviors are here to stay, and will be closely linked to how the pandemic evolves over time. So I think people were predicting a winter surge. I don't think anyone was predicting it really to the degree that we saw, that we're seeing in Europe, and the reactions that they're having. So I think going forward, we could still see these abnormal growth rates in digital channels because of the pandemic, outside of the systematic growth of e-commerce as a portion of retail. And so that's kind of the story in 2023. People were a little bit hesitant to say, oh, I'm going to go shopping in the stores like I used to. The other thing that I found interesting was that other digital channels is expected to increase its share by 1 percentage point. So those would be, you know, social media, messaging apps, voice assistants, gaming consoles, live streaming. So all of these other types of places that are now being enabled with commerce capabilities, people, consumers, do expect to be shopping more on those others in the next 2 years. And again, I think that can be tied a little bit, you know, accelerated to the pandemic, where people are in some countries now back in their homes, unable to go out, and they're going to spend more time on the internet, and a big portion of that time will be spent on, you know, social media and messaging, and that's where they'll be able to do their shopping.
So let's move down. I mean, this is a pretty comprehensive report, and I would like to touch on some of the key parts from every chapter. So let's move down to almost to the conclusion of the first chapter, about what I think is about the discovery and the shopper's journey.
And yes.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that, and what were the key findings that you saw from that part.
Mm-hmm. It's a great segue, right? I was talking about how people expect to be shopping more on these emerging digital touch points. And we talk about this at Salesforce a lot, and we call it shopping at the edge, because these are, you know, new places, edge cases where now more shopping is happening. And we asked our respondents by their parts of their shopper journey, discovery, buying, and service, what kind of channels or touch points they're using. And it's no surprise that social media is really prominent in all three parts of the shopper journey. So 46% of respondents said that they use social media to discover and evaluate products. And kind of tied to that is the number two response, which is influencers. 22% of people are turning to influencers for product discovery. And then when it comes to buying, you know, 40% said they're using a mobile wallet, and that sort of speaks to that super app that you were talking about earlier. In particular, India did over-index on this, and of course, Paytm and others have you know, super apps. But we also see like Cash App becoming more of a shopping destination rather than just a peer-to-peer transfer. And as I said earlier, PayPal's new app is more, you know, is a mobile wallet, but with a lot more shopping capabilities in that. So that's fascinating. And then 39% said that they're making purchases with an email. So that's not being redirected to a website. It's actually making the purchase in the email. And Yahoo has been very strategic about partnerships with retailers to enable shoppable emails. They have a partnership with Walmart, so you can do your grocery shopping within the email that you get from Walmart. And then 15% are making purchases on social media. And then when it comes to service, it's really all about you know, kind of text-based service now. 28% of people are using chatbots and chat to get their service inquiries fixed. 23% are using social media, so either in the comments or in the DMs. And then 22% are using messaging apps. So lots of different behavioral shifts when it comes to channels during different parts of the shopping journey. But looking at the data, it's really just incredible about how important social media is in part for all three parts of the shopper journey.
What's interesting is that I don't even see search included in the list here. Is search not even in the top five?
Well, these are just for the top five shopping at the edge. Search is in the results, but because it's sort of a standard way of, you know, finding products, we just didn't have that in the slide. But if you'd like, let me see.
So this is addition to search, I guess. And is that how we should translate it?
Right. So these are just the top five shopping at the edge categories. So, and then, for example, you know, we did put a search engine in, and 65% of consumers are using a search engine. So that makes sense. And 57% use a physical store to evaluate products. So those still are very dominant ways of people, of how people find and discover and evaluate new products. But we really wanted to focus on these emerging touch points that are gaining traction. And so that's why we took the top five of what we consider shopping at the edge channels.
Okay, so that's good, because I kind of like suddenly got worried for Google, but...
No, they're
doing fine.
Just fine.
Okay, we don't have to worry about them. All right. So now the other thing that's important, I guess, to remember is that the combination for each shopper is different, right? So like one thing that I see is that, like, you know, for myself as a consumer, I have different preferences at different times of the day, even sometimes. So so if you look at the combination of all of these, one shopper, one consumer is gonna. This is like a spaghetti journey, right? It's not a straight journey where some people only use social media and that's it, or So that's
it. You are correct, which makes it very difficult for retailers and brands, they really have to, map out their shopper journey and be able to react quickly when that changes because of new platforms or new consumer behaviors.
Yeah, and then the other really interesting channels that I see that you have is then live streaming and voice assistants. That's rather significant percentages. Live streaming at 13%, voice assistants 10%.
Yeah, again, with everyone at their homes and turning, not being able to meet in person, people turned to the internet, and obviously the retail and brands, retail industry and brands have been paying attention to what's gone on in China and how popular and significant live streaming is. So we saw a lot of innovation in the social media companies launching live stream, enabling that live stream with commerce capabilities in 2020, and that's continued throughout 2021. In fact, Walmart just announced it will be doing a live stream, the first one on Twitter on Friday for Black Friday. So there's a lot of both consumer behavior, spending time online, wanting to interact with people in a live manner as opposed to just watching something that's pre-recorded, and from the industry to offer those experiences. And so it's becoming a more important way for people to discover and evaluate products. Voice assistants, 10% use them for discovery and product evaluation. And then 7% of people are using voice assistants to buy things, which is impressive. And I think part of it might be we just said voice assistant. And I think some things that people, we might just have in our minds that, it's just the Alexa or the Google Home without screens. And that's just not, the case anymore. There's so many devices now that use voice plus a screen that would make it easier for discovery and purchase, because you can talk to it, but you can also see things and then make the purchase through that device. The other thing that I think goes on to notice when we talk about voice is that many apps now are voice enabled. So again, when we say voice assistant, we didn't specify Siri or Alexa. It was pretty vague. So I think in some cases, our respondents were thinking about their behaviors in apps. So I can go to the Sephora app and I can use voice to search for products. And that has been, that's slowly becoming kind of a standard feature of an app, is being able to use voice search in order to search for products. And I think, if we think broadly about consumer habits and in my own behaviors, right, is I talk to my Roku all the time to find TV shows or the streaming service I want. So it's becoming, talking to things to get results is not just that Google Home and that Alexa device or your phone with Siri or Google Assistant. It's becoming voices permeating a lot of different devices that make it easier to evaluate and purchase products.
Yeah, that's so very, that's a good point, because I think maybe in the next report, you might even remove assistance and just say voice.
Yeah.
Because in 2 years, that capability is probably going to be a lot more prevalent than even now.
Exactly. So, I agree.
Interesting. Yeah. Let's move on to chapter 2, loyalty.
Yeah, this was a fun one. I think, what stood out to me is that we had two questions that weren't in the loyalty section. These were just about influencing, what influences a shopper's decision to make a purchase. And we asked of these offerings, what makes you more likely to buy from a brand or a retailer? not surprisingly, free shipping and free returns are the number two thing, or number one and number two things that people want in order to make a purchase. And then the third was loyalty rewards programs. And then the second question we asked, which is, which is true of your favorite brand? So even ignoring retailers, what's true of your favorite brand? And the number one response was offers a loyalty program. I think we often talk about like loyalty program fatigue and people don't use it. And to a degree that's probably the case, but I think that there's, again, a consumer behavior shift that they just expect everyone to have a loyalty program and, you know, they'll use it, but maybe they won't be super active. But the loyalty programs are getting, you know, so technically advanced that you can use it quite passively. You know, you can just sign up and then anytime you make a purchase, you're going to get points for it. It's really, really easy. And so I think people just kind of expect that if they're going to shop with you, they want to be rewarded in some way and have that program. And so I think that kind of goes against this sort of narrative that people will only, you know, have a certain amount of loyalty programs, and of those loyalty programs, only a few of them will actually, the consumer will actually be active in.
Did you have any kind of like an age, I guess, factor in the research? I'm interested to see if loyalty is more popular for a certain age group.
That is a good question, and we did break it out by four generations. So let me see. Again, I came prepared with the data. And let's see, offers in fact, for loyalty program, it's pretty standard across all age groups, except the older customers, the Gen X and the baby boomers, slightly more inclined to shop with a brand that has a loyalty program. But when it comes to brand or retailer, it's pretty much the same. It's kind of interesting, Gen Z underrepresented in loyalty programs as far as whether or not that influences their way to what they purchase. What they really over-index in is unique product collaborations, limited edition customized products, and exclusive shopping events. So that's kind of the, you know, of those, loyalty program is still more important. But when it comes to other generations, they're not as impressed by a loyalty program.
Okay, so that's really interesting to know. And the type of events that you mentioned are actually really like different from what the older generations are used to.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, it's very fascinating. You know, I would never think of going to a store. Well, let me take that back. I guess in recent years, I've been to store events, whether it's, you know, for a speaker or even like Apple where you take classes, and that has really resonated with younger consumers. They do want to go to stores for special events, whether it's, you know, maybe a makeup artist at Sephora or a skincare specialist there. They really do see retail as not just a place to make product purchases, whereas I think the older generations, you know, didn't grow up with having kind of special events, and, you know, these types of, you know, product influencers that they would want to meet in person. So there's maybe a different notion of what retail is between sort of the Gen Z at one end and the baby boomers at the other.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of complexity in these numbers and these findings, which, you know, we're going to have to figure out. This is really a really good way to look at and actually point you in the right direction of where to dig, So as I'm and I'm thinking as like a retailer or a brand, because of of course nobody can go into all of these, all of the channels and the apps and everything. So you have to like pick and choose, and this type of data can really help on that. So.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Yes, that's our aim. And I also agree with you that there is so many channels. I mean, in a different research report by Salesforce, consumers are touching 9 different channels during their shopper journey, from pre-purchase all the way to post-purchase. So you have to really understand your consumer and where they want to interact with you so that you can be there where your consumer wants you. And yes, that'll look different across each retailer and brand, which makes it complicated but exciting.
That's a good way to put it. Yes. All right. So, what's the next chapter? Customer
Yeah, one more.
experience.
I'm sorry, yeah, customer experience is the next chapter. So speaking of, again, all of those touch points, how are brands and retailers living up to the expectations of consumers? And I think one of the data points that really jumped out was that 80% of shoppers will abandon a retailer after 3 bad experiences, but the bulk of it is actually 62% will leave after 2 bad experiences. So we have less patience for mistakes than we used to when it comes to retail and customer experience. However, when we surveyed the retail executives, fewer than half of them had a completely defined customer experience strategy. They've been rolled out to their whole company and understood well and executed against. And the top barriers for them, which we hear echoed when we talk to people in the industry, is a lack of organizational alignment and processes for all of these different channels that we're talking about. And from that comes, the complexity of the data that you get from your consumers through these digital interactions. And then, these are billion-dollar companies, and they're not necessarily as agile as they need to be to turn that data into insights and take action, to respond to all of the changes that are happening, with consumer behavior and the digital landscape.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the challenges, and one of the ways that I'm hoping the platforms will help more in the future on that agility. And we'll get into it a little bit after we're done with the report. I want to ask you some questions about really what's happening at Salesforce and the commerce side. So. Yeah, I mean, so and that was like a really interesting point. 66% of customers will drop a brand with 2 bad experiences.
Yep.
And the bad experience is defined as.
Anything is really open-ended, right? Because it can stem from, poor return policy, your lost item, insufficient service at the store, or long hold times for service on the phone, or unresponsiveness. Yeah, so we kept it pretty broad.
Yeah, and I mean probably the website being slow or.
Right. Your payment method not being offered. There's a lot of things that'll upset consumers.
Yeah, they are, or I should say we are fickle.
Yes, we are. Very fickle and very demanding.
So, yeah, so this is, yeah, I mean this experience is a common theme across all of retail, not just online, of course, right? Even in the store, the talk is all about this experience. At the shopping center, the talk is all about the experience. So I think that's, and now with the metaverse, I guess, where is this concept of experience moving for us? That's. that's a big question for me, is like, what do we do now and how do we look ahead on the concept of the experience?
I agree, right? And kind of echoing what I said earlier, is that it's really important to understand your consumers and what they want and where they spend their time. So it's no surprise to me that we see a lot of brands that are very digitally savvy being prepared for the next frontier, which would be the metaverse. I think Nike and its partnership with Roblox is a well thought out, well developed way to insert the brand where its consumers are in a natural way. And then, but not forgetting that the real world still exists. So there is, if I remember correctly, there is a real world component to the Roblox news. So I think that's the important thing, is yes, you know, the experience is going to evolve, and it evolves very quickly in the digital world, but we're all still people in the physical world. And so bridging those together is going to be important, and you can't neglect one for the other, because if you don't have a robust, great experience in store, which is the best representation of your brand, because someone walks in, they talk to an associate, they can touch and feel the merchandise, you know, you see the visual brand cues in that store, that's just going to be the most rich and immersive experience that you have, even if people are spending more time online. So you need to make sure that your stores are up to, you know, the standards that consumers expect, and your digital experience is also up to that as well. So it's very, again, very complicated, very exciting, and can be very expensive to have to maintain and manage both channels. And I think sometimes, unfortunately, people prioritize one over the other when you really need to be thinking of them together as a flywheel that feeds into each other.
Yeah. I mean, the equation is continuously getting new variables added to it. I remember in school, in engineering school, you know, these calculus equations, and you know, like the retail equation is kind of like, reminds me of that, but it, with the change that you're like constantly getting new variables added to it. So
Yeah, definitely. And I just looked it up. So the Nike Land experience in Roblox will also be brought to life at the Nike's House of Innovation store in New York City, or House of Innovation, or yeah, in New York City, with a special Snapchat lens. So you have basically three different players bringing this to life. You have Nike, you have Roblox, and then you have Snapchat. And then, like I said, you know, Nike isn't, you know, neglecting its stores to build this digital experience. They're making sure that the store is a part of it in some way.
So maybe the metaverse is not just all digital.
That would be my opinion, is that you need to figure out a way to unify both. And I think the jury's still out on, you know, how that's done, and it could be done multiple ways. Like, who would have imagined that, you know, Nike would not partner with Snapchat on this? I could also see, you know, we saw, and I've been tweeting a lot about QR codes, right? So what, you know, they're, you know, and you can use QR codes to scan things at the House of Innovation. So why not have, like, you know, special product from Roblox there, or product you see in store that you could scan with your QR code to put in your Roblox universe. So I do think that there's a lot of different ways that you can unify these two physical and digital universes. And you know, Nike's a great leader in retail, and that's what struck me the most about this announcement, is that it's not just a virtual world, they're going to connect that to the real world. And I think brands and retailers who think like that will be well positioned in the future.
Yeah, that's a really good example. Thanks for bringing it up. So,
my pleasure. Stores are still important.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like email. You know, like every few years, somebody will predict the death of email, and it comes back even stronger.
Right.
So, all right, let's talk about the fourth chapter, which has a very interesting topic, the unified shopping experience.
Yes, so speaking of stores, we just have these great transitions. And like I said, you know, the store is still important. You know, 43% of transactions will happen there. Like I said, it's the best manifestation of your brand that you can have. But it's got to change, right? Well, we just talked about how the House of Innovation, which is a relatively new concept, is now getting a Snapchat lens. So everything needs to be all evolving, you know, constantly. And a little bit more sort of short term was just all of the omni-channel features that retailers had to implement during the pandemic, because there was such a shift to, you know, online ordering, and then how do you get that product in a healthy and safe way, but also how do you get a product that might be locked in a store that's not open. So you know, 57% of shoppers that we surveyed purchased a product online and picked it up in the store. And then what was fascinating, so that was like the most popular response when it came to blurring the physical and digital from a shopper's point of view, is just being able to buy online and just get it at the store. And then the next two were actually in-store behaviors, which is, you know, 29% of shoppers have researched a product online using a mobile device when in store, and 25% of shoppers scanned a QR code to learn more about that product while in store. So yeah, the store itself, you know, has the product. You can touch and feel them, which is a main reason to go to the store. But people are doing even more in that store, researching it, either just kind of looking up on their phone or using a QR code as a shortcut to learn more about that product. So you have, again, these shifting consumer behaviors that really, you know, blurring the lines between physical and digital. And then another thing that we asked about was, we saw this acceleration of, again, all of these digital features happen. So we wanted to know, okay, what did you have before the pandemic? And then what did you introduce during the pandemic? And the most popular thing that was implemented during the pandemic was curbside pickup. It had existed, the drive-throughs, curbside pickup, you know, 40% of retail executives said they already had it. So it wasn't truly something new or innovative, but the pace that it was rolled out across these huge fleets of thousands of stores was just incredible in 2020. 38% of retail executives said that they implemented curbside during the pandemic. So that was pretty interesting. And then the second most or most popular feature that was introduced during the pandemic was contactless payment. So again, these things around health and safety were the priorities that retail executives rolled out into their stores due to the pandemic. And the third, there's a tie for third, and we talked about this one before, which is that partnership with third-party delivery apps. So 36% of retail executives, you know, launched those partnerships with, you know, these delivery apps to get that product home to people's homes, so they could avoid the store. And then the other thing was appointment scheduling, which I don't think we talk about too much, but 36% of retail executives rolled out these appointment schedules, so you could go into the store at a, you know, at a time, get service from a store associate, and that way you're not sort of wandering around looking for help. You can get in and get out quickly, achieve your purpose. And so that was something that was really popular to do.
Yeah, those are really interesting points. The first one, buy online, I guess pick up in store or BOPIS or curbside. Curbside is somewhat different, but it's almost the same, right?
Yes, so curbside, so buy online, pick up in store would mean that the shopper goes into the store to retrieve the packages, whereas curbside would be you get to stay in your car and a store associate brings the products out to you to put in your trunk, usually. And so that the difference is, you know, someone going into the store, you obviously have an opportunity to sell them more items, which help covers the cost of that that free service. And then curbside, don't really have that opportunity to upsell them because they're not coming into the store unless you're using some really creative digital notifications and add to cart type of prompts. And then you have a little bit more labor cost because you have a store associate, you know, walking out and walking back, and that time spent is servicing that is time that's not spent doing something else. So, you know, just the fact of, it's kind of like that last 10 feet can make a difference, whether or not that person is walking the 10 feet into the store to retrieve their packages, or if it's a store associate walking out those 10 feet to put the package in your car.
Yeah, and what I've seen, you know, from my experience, it seems like the curbside pickup is a lot more popular with grocery than other types of products. I have no idea if that's even close to the reality, but that's what I've seen, like around myself where I go. I see people doing a lot of curbside pickup. Maybe it's because they, you know, like the clothing stores, for example, apparel, they just don't offer it. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, so like Target and Walmart already, you know, were trialing curbside. So I think they were in a good position to get it to work. And then the nature of the product, right? Groceries can be quite heavy if you're shopping for, you know, a family of four, you're doing a weekly shop. So getting those products, you know, brought to your car, which I think, you know, based on my own shopping habits, many times I've seen store associates help people who, you know, are elderly and carry those bags out to the car. So I think, yeah, the nature of the product is that people would much prefer, aside from health and safety issues, to have someone carry that stuff out to their car so they're not, you know, bogged down with eight different bags and then they have to return the shopping cart themselves. So and I could imagine that it may pick up in the winter too. I live in Chicago, so I could imagine having someone else walk out in the car to put my bags in would be a great perk.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the interesting part also about this data is that I see a lot of things like really growing, you know, during the pandemic, but they were already popular with retailers before the pandemic. So, you know, like you said, I think a lot of these things were actually available, but they just picked up the pace. And that's a good thing from my point of view, is that the retailers were already working on these different initiatives. Even before the pandemic, they almost like, you know, it was a really good coincidence for them that they already were working on these.
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, everyone has said, you know, the 5-year roadmap was just condensed into 5 months. I don't think we've seen anything truly novel come out as far as technology is concerned, because of the pandemic. What we've seen is just an acceleration of these features being rolled out by companies and an acceleration of consumer adoption. Now, one of the two things that we did ask about was augmented reality and virtual reality, and a lot of people did implement those during the pandemic. And again, I think it's more sector specific, so it doesn't rank really high across all of retail, but if you looked at fashion or beauty, they would be much higher if we drilled into the data a bit deeper. But what we did see is that they have some of the highest retention rates going forward. So, you know, and that, again, the augmented reality and virtual reality, those things we've been talking about for, you know, well, probably almost a decade by now. And that technology keeps getting better and better. And so that's something that maybe was truly novel, is that people were kind of like, oh, what are the use cases for AR and VR? But, well, if you can't touch your cosmetics because there's no sampling, or you want to buy more of your cosmetics online, or your sunglasses, then that's a pretty strong use case, and that really accelerated the adoption of those technologies.
There's another really interesting part of the report about store associates. What did you learn about that's changing on that front?
Yeah, I agree. So we talked about how stores have evolved, and that just means that, you know, the store associate has to evolve that role. So, you know, one of the things that we saw is that they now have multiple responsibilities. One is, we talked about online order fulfillment. Now, whether that's, you know, curbside or in-store, lots of store associates are now doing more order fulfillment from that store. And then in some cases, they're actually doing last mile deliveries on behalf of their retailers, getting paid to make those deliveries. And we talked about that, you know, appointment scheduling. Well, you know, there's also been a shift to doing virtual styling. So they're virtual stylists. So instead of going into a store and having that appointment or wandering around looking for service, you can actually just book a virtual appointment and get a virtual stylist. You don't even have to leave your home to have a store associate help you. They've also taken on customer service tasks. So they'll be able to, again, help you, you know, while they're at the store, in the back room, or even at home, via chat or text, video or voice. So you don't have to receive service in the store from an associate. They can be delivering it from anywhere. And then one of my favorites is the social influencer role. And there's a great example on TikTok. It's Cameron from Walmart is his TikTok handle. And he started out at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, Walmart had stayed open, and he downloaded TikTok and was doing all these fun dances and gained quite a following. And he was working full-time at Walmart, and now he's part-time worker at store associate at Walmart, and also an official social influencer on behalf of Walmart. So he, if you go to his TikTok, he'll do different videos showcasing, you know, brands in a paid, you know, ad for that brand, and I'm sure and jointly with Walmart. And he has 5 million followers on TikTok. So he went from, you know, probably a few hundred in the beginning of 2020 to 5 million almost at the end of 2021. So, and instead of just saying, no, you can't do that, Walmart has embraced Cameron and others and put them through official social media training and are, you know, paid and permitted to be social influencers on behalf of the retailers and brands.
So he is probably making a lot more money off of that than his Walmart job now.
Yeah, I would imagine. That's why he doesn't have to be full time anymore. He can be
part time. So this is really interesting. I mean, it's an interesting, I mean, really important case, but to be honest, you know, we need millions of people working in retail stores, right? How many of them are going to be influencers? And then, you know, are you still going to pay a minimum wage? You know, I mean, it's not just their role that's changing. I mean, compensation has to change with that.
Yes, I agree. And I think you're right that, you know, not everyone is, I'm not, you know, I would do poorly in TikTok. I cannot dance. But there are a few, but I think the change is that, you know, companies would shun that type of behavior and really worry about their brand and, you know, not allow people to do that. And the mentality is, wow, we have employees that understand our product, understand your stores, who understand social media. Let's embrace it and let's give them the platform and the tools to be successful. So I think that's the important mind shift, is that, you know, instead of being super protective and only corporate can talk about our brand online, embracing the people, the store associates who, you know, understand the day-to-day of that and allowing them and compensating them for that talent. And I, you know, Cameron seems to be early in his career. So I could see him, you know, rising in the ranks of the social media department at Walmart or other retailers, since he really has a feel and understanding for that. So, and I think that's another point, an important point to make about the rise of this omni-store associate, is that you can, in some cases, brands are, you know, you're 2 days on the sales floor selling, 2 days doing customer service, and then 1 day, you know, doing online order fulfillment. So it gives variety to the associate, and they can really figure out what, you know, part of the role or responsibilities they really like. So maybe you're great selling in person and you don't really like customer service, and so, you know, you kind of rotate off and you lean in more into selling online. But I think it's great that people on the floor get exposure to all these different aspects of the business. So I think, you know, you understand the retail business even better because you've been in each department. You can, you know, and you're living the day to day, so you can suggest recommendations for improvement. But then you can also have a greater understanding of where your career path in the retail industry will lead you.
Yeah, that's one of the ways that I see things really having a, like a paradigm shift in the store experience, is really the staff and the people. I mean, I think you have a really interesting photo in the report where you have the Salesforce teddy bear, or well, I don't know what the name of him is, or that's not
Astro.
Cameron. Is that Astro? Okay, it's not Cameron, right?
No, it's Astro.
You could probably replace that with Superman or one of the Avengers, you know, with all these different things they need to do.
So yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then, you know, the other part of it is that even as far as, like, you know, 5 years ago, the general thing was just being behind the POS, just ringing people up. And that's completely out in the future. And the POS is all going to be self-checkout. So the store associate is just there to help and not necessarily ring the sales.
Yeah, I agree. Or the you know, the store, we talk about the store associate, you know, being untethered from the checkout. So either the consumer or the shopper can check themselves out using the app or different methods, or just walk out technology like Amazon and others have, or the store associate has, you know, a mobile device that allows them to do a lot of things, you know, look up your past history on orders, understand your loyalty status, and you know, and check you out on the go, so that, you know, they aren't kind of sitting stationary behind a checkout and just providing that service, but they can actually be out on the floor and helping people and doing other activities, away from the cash wrap.
Yeah, it's very interesting how this part of the store experience is changing. So POS is of course another part of the key. I mean, part of like being in the store is, you know, taking care of the payment without hopefully waiting in line for 15 minutes or more. So that's probably where the evolution in the POS and self-checkout is going to be. Do you see a lot of that happening in non-grocery?
Yes, I do. I especially like in high touch items like apparel and jewelry. I do think in soft goods. I mean, it already kind of happens, right? In large furniture stores, right? You're not going to ring up, that sofa at the checkout. You've been helped by an associate who maybe not rings you up there, but has information and takes you to the checkout. So I do think that, that all retailers and brands will embrace sort of this mobile checkout, whether again it's the consumer doing it or the store associate doing it in service of the customer. Because I mean, if you think of some of the large store formats, right, it can be very hard to find a checkout that's open after you've done all of your shopping. So it's much easier if you can find a store associate or during your course of being helped by a store associate just to complete the transaction right there. Kind of my far out prediction would be that the cash wrap just sort of goes away, and it is there for certain things. Like if people are paying in cash, you need to be able to take that cash and make change. So you'll always have that on site, but it won't be the main point for people to check out at.
What do you think is the role and the future of the shopping centers in how retail is changing?
That is a good question. I do think that there is a role for shopping centers. Again, I'm a big believer in the importance of the store, and that the shopping center is a great marketplace of stores, right? So it's, again, it's all about understanding who your customer is, getting the right brands to be in that store, and not just retail brands, whether that's services like gyms or spas, food service. And with that, you can attract the right customer who wants to, still go out and enjoy shopping and to use it as a leisure activity. Shopping centers that are kind of based on the premise of commodity products are probably not going to make it, because those commodity products are being bought online or not bought at all, because the consumer has changed. So I do think that the shopping center and the malls are going through an evolution, just like the physical store is. So, we've seen some, indoor, middle tier malls have difficulties, but, outdoor open space centers, strip malls, and, luxury, malls, mall centers do well. So it's really a mixed bag of what's going on. But I think if you understand your consumer, what drives them, what makes them get off their couch and not just buy online while watching Netflix, then you'll have a great, a great business and a great experience for those shoppers.
Yeah, and the one of the reasons that I asked that question is that shopping centers are also experimenting with e-commerce.
Yeah, so. Definitely. I mean, that was something that also had to be sped up during the pandemic, because you know, that curbside adoption, a lot of the malls really just aren't set up for that, and they had to remain closed because they were non-essential. So I think that was one of the big digital features that also necessitated, you know, an e-commerce experience that allowed for curbside. And now that they've, you know, rushed to build it, you know, during the pandemic, it's all about refining that, both from like that e-commerce standpoint, and then the fulfillment options that people are expecting nowadays. And I do think that there's some cool things going on the e-commerce side. And then we've also seen the big mall players partner with Afterpay and Klarna. So even on the payment side of things, really adopting these new financial instruments to be relevant to customers, and getting them access to stores within the malls, advertising within the malls of this financial payment. That's another area of innovation that we've seen.
I can see the advertising side of it, but it's kind of difficult to see the financial model of a shopping center partnering with Afterpay, because, you know, the customer is not purchasing the item from the shopping center. They're buying it from the retailer. So how does the mall actually get into the middle of that transaction with something like Afterpay?
Yeah, I don't know what the financial agreements were between these buy now pay later providers and the malls. That's a good question.
Yeah, the e-commerce equation that the malls are working on is an interesting one. There's probably something there, but we don't know enough to know what exactly. So, I'm hoping that this experiment will actually end up, and it's not short-lived, just because if it doesn't succeed in the first or second try, because that's how experiments work, right? You can't just try once and say, oh, it didn't work, we're not going to do it anymore, we're giving up.
Right, exactly.
That's what a lot of retailers do, unfortunately, or people in retail. They think experiments are like, you tried once, and if it didn't work, that's it. You know, the idea is not good. So
yeah, I think that's definitely a philosophy, because things change, right? You may have been too early, or your consumer behavior changed, or the technology changed. You can put it away for a while, but then maybe you should be revisiting it. I mean, my favorite example of this is the QR code. It had the biggest comeback in the West because of the pandemic, since people had to use the QR code to scan their menus. And now people are more comfortable with it, and you see it everywhere, on televisions, on billboards and posters and on packaging. And, you know, I was surprised by 25% of consumers saying that they're using QR codes in the store to look up more product information. If you thought QR codes were dead in the West, which was a great assumption, you're wrong now because of the pandemic, and it changed things. So it's always important to, unfortunately, again, very complicated to keep track of those failures and then revisit them to see if, you know, something was different and now it can be successful.
Yeah, the QR code is a really good example. And I should confess, I am probably one of those consumers that did not pick it up early. But just like you said, because of the restaurant menus, now I'm starting to use it more.
Mm-hmm. And then I've also noticed, because I've been tracking it, is that the QR experience in my camera is actually getting better. So Apple, and I guess some of their software updates, it now shows you, okay, you've got the QR code, it's going to take you to this link, it's going to take you here. There's little nudges that make the QR code scanning a bit more detailed than it was at the very beginning of the pandemic. So again, even Apple is upgrading the experience because so many people are doing it.
So I've gone rogue on you, and I'm asking you questions outside the report. So I hope you don't
No,
mind.
that's fine.
What do you think about any thoughts about the role of blockchain in retail?
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts. how much time do you have? No, I think, first of all, I remember when Walmart, IBM, and some of the big food manufacturers, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, got together and announced an initiative to put the supply chain on the blockchain. So there's a lot of inefficiencies in the supply chain. There's, as far as like communicating where things are, where things are from, and so people are still using fax machines and Excel documents, and they're all prone to human error or being lost, especially if you're using, I mean, in some cases the handoffs are still using pen and paper, and those get thrown out accidentally. So, and we haven't really heard too much about the blockchain and the supply chain, so I'd be interested in to hear kind of if that initiative is still going on. Obviously, there's a lot of things happening in the supply chain, and maybe that's been deprioritized because of the other more pressing matters. So I think that's an area of blockchain that is still viable, or still fascinating, and I'm not quite sure where the state is. And then I think for blockchain, I think we're going to see a lot of use around loyalty programs and developing loyalty programs based on the blockchain, that allow consumers to, earn cryptocurrency or to be redeemed at, either cashed out into US or into fiat currency or redeemed at other partners. I think that's an interesting use case for the blockchain. And then kind of not specifically the blockchain, but non-fungible tokens, the NFTs. I see a lot of opportunity there. Again, when it comes to loyalty programs, but digital twins of physical products, unlocking special experiences, or even just, some of these brands have so much cultural cachet and history behind them, and have true fans of the brand. So, like, what would you, I do think like an NFT of like a, famous sketch done by a famous designer, would be great, would really resonate with consumers, to have access to that sort of, that digitized version of that. If the owner, the true owner, the brand owner doesn't want to give up the physical, document, but they could digitize it. And then, of course, we talked about the metaverse and how, and so again, I think there's a lot of room for experimentation around blockchain and its components, to be part of that universe where you can have your digital skins and wear them in any sort of gaming system or new world that has not been created yet.